Trying to get away.
Meeting will please come to order. It's a regular meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. Time is 1:25, February 28th. Members present are Representative Navarre, Representative Kopanen, Representative Hanley, Representative Collins, Representative Boucher, and Representative Davis. We have several bills up for discussion today, and we're going to begin with House Bill 6. An act relating to workers' compensation and providing for an effective date. And the prime sponsor is Representative Collins, and she'll be the first person to testify.
I can stay here, can I?
Sure.
You have before you these round files, which are really information that I have received over the past several months regarding House Bill 5, and it's really backup information to substantiate the reasons for proposing the bill. I'll read a memo to you that's in your file that basically... Okay. Basically, a brief overview is that Section 2, AS 2330.115C, assesses penalties which are payable to the State of Alaska Second Injury Fund for failure to file certain reports within the Workers' Compensation Division within a 30-day period as required by statute. There is no forgiveness clause for oversight due to human error. Various reports required by the Workers' Compensation Division are relevant to activities regarding the progress of a workers' compensation claim. However, the purpose of this labor report is primarily for data collection purposes for the Workers' Compensation Division. And under no circumstances does the reporting or lack of it affect any benefits to the injured worker. The penalties assessed under AS 2330.155C have been a major concern for employers and insurance carriers since 1981. While it is agreed that the Division of Workers' Compensation does have a legitimate need for the data that are compiled from these reports, it is clear that the level of penalties assessed places an unfair burden on the employer and insurance carrier, and ultimately, these costs are then passed on to the consumer. The purpose of House Bill 6, sponsor substitute, is to establish a balance between the competing needs of an accurate database and a penalty system which recognizes the availability of occasional human error by office workers. The bill basically establishes a 21-day grace period for employers and insurance carriers to correct timely reporting errors. The bill does not relieve the insurance carrier or the employer from any responsibilities for timely reporting. It does not require that the Division of Workers' Compensation change any of its procedures relevant to the reporting mechanisms. It is not in any way adverse to the effect of delivery of services to the injured worker, and it does not change the intent of AS 2335155C to encourage timely reporting payments. More importantly, it does not carry a costly fiscal note. What you have before you today is a sponsor substitute for the original bill. And in drafting the bill, it was drafted with the response as a response to people's concerns. And there were some items in the bill which I felt were negotiable. And upon receiving information from the Department of Labor that they had to objections to the portions of the bill, I had the bill redrafted in response to those questions and problems that the Department of Labor indicated they had with the bill. Insurance carriers are more than willing to make these compromises in the hopes of getting some relief for what, in a sense, might seem like a small problem, but is really quite a large problem to insurance carriers. You have a complete file before you, and I think some of you looked it over. I've delivered it to you in advance, and with that, I'm completed my testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Collins. At this time, I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute. If there are no objections, what we have under consideration now is the sponsor substitute for House Bill 6. Now I'd like to welcome our statewide teleconference sites and all the people who are waiting to testify on this particular bill. And I'd ask that if you could, since there are so many, waiting to testify, if we could keep it as short and concise as possible, and if possible, and when possible, to choose a spokesman maybe to state what your opinion and your position is on the bill. And with that, we'll go to Anchorage and begin with, I'm not sure if I have all these names right, but we'll begin with Tom Welton. Okay, David, this is Mike Navarre. If you would, how about if you just begin at the top and we'll hear all the testimony, unless they have to choose a spokesman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Renee Murray has asked to speak first.
I'm Renee Murray, and I'm the Alaska Manager and Vice President of Southwest Services. I'm here today with several members of the insurance community who would like to speak to you briefly to express some of our concerns over Section AS-2330-155C of the Workers' Compensation Act, which we refer to as penalty policy. As a group, we are totally in support of House Bill 6, sponsored substitute, which is a very reasonable modification of the current statute, and it will go a long way toward reducing some of the problems we are now encountering, hopefully relieve some of the morale problems the current penalty legislation has created. As an employer, it is the interest and welfare of my employees which has concerned me the most about the current law. Although it is the employer or insurance carrier or adjuster who pays the penalty, it is the employee who made the error or oversight that actually feels the stigma and suffers the stress of having cost their employer to pay what is often a very large penalty resulting from a very small mistake. I have personally tried to impress upon our employees the fact that none of us are perfect and that there is no way that we can be 100% error-free. I don't want my employees to suffer because of an unjust law. But no matter what I say, they still feel the personal responsibility, and collectively we suffer from the morale problems that result. In this regard, I would like to quote to you from Bulletin Number 8403, dated February 15, 1984, issued by the Alaska Workers' Compensation Division, quote, "There are some important points to remember regarding the penalty issue under AS-2330-155C. They are, one, the fact that the applicant was timely paid and only the report was late makes no difference. The penalty under 2330-155C is intended to encourage timely reporting. Timely payments are encouraged by the penalty. Two, oversight, mistake, or inadvertently forgetting to file the report does not make a difference in the steps of the penalty. The penalty is mandatory, as the law says, or shall assess the civil penalty. Again, the legislature wanted to assure compliance and wanted to penalize an employer-insurer who causes the data to be incorrect. This makes it obvious that there is no allowance for human error under the current legislation. I have been advised by letter from the director of the Workers' Compensation Division that the insurance industry as a whole is reporting correctly and timely in 97% to 99% of all cases. This makes it pretty obvious that there is no flagrant abuse for which we should be so unjustly penalized. This proposed legislation will not change the reporting requirements that are currently in existence, and neither will it forgive a human error. But it does allow for a more modified penalty if we do respond promptly once we are notified an error has occurred. If we fail to respond, we are still subject to the current $1,000 maximum penalty. To give you some idea of the severity of the morale problems that this has created for our employees, I would like to read to you a memo I received from one of my employees who received a notice of a $290 penalty for a late report. I'm quoting now. "Renee, please review. I guess this shoots down that I was a good worker. I guess maybe I was just made to be a clerical. I do feel that the reason for this mistake and the other file was that I was just very bombarded with too many things at once. No excuse, though. I just should have worked harder. I feel that I have let people down. And so I will understand if my services won't be needed any longer. Unquote. I would also like to read to you a letter one of my employees wrote to the Workers' Compensation Division. I'm quoting. A penalty of $525 has been assessed due to a late report. Please be advised that the initial report was filed on April 21st when payment was made to begin compensation. On April 22nd, a controversial was filed pending investigation into the questionability of a job injury by the employee. The employee had been released for light duty. A suspension report was ordered, but due to a mix-up in the office, due to human error, this report was not filed. At about the same time, I had received a phone call indicating that my father was dying of cancer and for me to come back to the lower 48. Upon my return and review of the file, it was noted that the suspension report had not, in fact, been filed, and at that time it was ordered and filed on May 25th. It is strongly felt by this adjuster that the employee was paid compensation timely, the initial report was filed timely. The controversial also was filed timely, giving notice to the Workers' Compensation Board that benefits were in fact suspended. The penalty seems excessive, in that all of us are unfortunately not computers and therefore, as hard as the human may try, do in fact make errors. To penalize the employer for that type of human error is extremely unjust. It is formally requested that the penalty of $525 be excused. Unquote. Gentlemen, a penalty was assessed on both of these cases. Both of these individuals were excellent employees who performed their jobs with a very high degree of accuracy. I have always tried to assure my staff that they should not feel any personal guilt or blame for making an occasional error, as I know of no one who walks on this earth today that is totally error-free. But in spite of my best assurances, the employees still become extremely upset every time they receive a penalty letter from the Workers' Compensation Board. So in closing, I would like to assure you how important the passage of House Bill 6, Sponsor Substitute, is to our organization and to our industry, and I sincerely appreciate the time and consideration that you are giving us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Murray, for your testimony. As far as examples go and reading letters, in the interest of time, from this point on, I'll have to ask that if you have particular examples that you want to make, that you send us copies for the committee to review. There are several people who wish to testify on this bill, and if we allow all the examples to be read that could maybe be read by the committee, I think we're going to really run into a time problem. So at this point, I'll take another person from Anchorage, and then we'll go to Fairbanks.
Thank you very much, and pardon me, Mr. Chairman, are we only taking testimony at this time on Post Bill 6?
That's correct.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to call Kathy to the microphone.
My name is Kathy Smith. I'm a workers' compensation claim supervisor with Industrial Indemnity of Alaska. I would like to present the following testimony to the committee in the hope that it will enhance your understanding of the requirements of Section 155C and the appropriateness of House Bill 6. Under this section, as you are aware, the insurance adjuster must report when benefits paid to an employee are started, stopped, or changed in any way. This results in an average filing of 4 reports per claim and up to 10 or more reports on lengthy or complex cases. Industrial Indemnity averages 1,250 claims handled to conclusion during the course of a year. Using the minimum figure of 4 reports per claim, this results in a minimum of 5,000 reports being processed in 1 year. Currently, we have 5 claim adjusters. As you can see, this averages 1,000 reports per adjuster per year. The value of a system which requires notification of benefit adjustments to the injured worker and the Division of Workers' Compensation is recognized. However, it appears the penalty statute in its current form is creating an undue amount of pressure for those given the responsibility of reporting. Given the fact that adjusters are responsible for such a large number of reports It is understandable that occasionally there will be a human error. House Bill Number 6 presents a recording system which, while not absolving the adjuster of their responsibility, alleviates some of the pressure exerted on that adjuster. This will allow top priorities of investigating and evaluating claims to ensure injured workers are provided benefits to them in a timely manner to remain intact. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith, for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Fairbanks and take testimony from Claire Horatka.
This is Claire Horatka. I'm the claims manager for Scott Whistle Services here in Fairbanks, and I would like to ask the committee for their support of this substitute bill, House Bill Number 6. We try very hard to give the best possible service to the injured worker. We do represent the employer in self-insured, but our main obligation is to the person who's injured. We try to pay all benefits in a timely fashion and to do as much as we can to assist the injured person to return to work. The penalty clause, as it is presently written, really puts an unfair burden on us to comply with paperwork. We do try to get it done correctly and quickly, and we want to comply with everything that the state asks us to do. However, it is very unfair to have this threat of a huge penalty hanging over our heads. I personally know of some adjusters that have offered to pay the penalties themselves because they felt so guilty that for one reason or another, they overlooked to check the proper box or to submit the report. I want to thank every member of the committee for their time in listening to our viewpoint, and I just ask you to please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Heretica. At this point in Fairbanks still, I'd like to take testimony from John Layden.
How do you do? This is John Layden, risk manager for the city of Fairbanks. I'm here to testify in favor of this amendment and bill inasmuch as protection for the taxpayer. Anytime that an assessment is made, that is a dollar amount that must be paid by someone. The city of Fairbanks, as well as the North Star Borough, is self-insured. All of the monies that come out of any type of assessment must be borne by the taxpayer. This particular penalty that we're talking about is only payable after we have found we have not made a report, but we have made the necessary payment to the injured or necessary monetary measured party. Therefore, I think that it is really a very obstructive type of penalty that we are being forced to pay. In one way, taxation without representation to some degree. I feel that we should back this present bill that's being submitted, that we be given notice first. If you do not make the necessary report then in the necessary time, then the penalty should be implemented. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Layden. Is there anyone else in Fairbanks who wishes to testify at this time?
No, that's all that we have today.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to go back to Anchorage and have the moderator begin with the witnesses there and just continue, I guess, until we're finished with them.
Thank you, sir. At this time, I'd like to call Tammy Lindsay to the microphone.
Approach the mic. Northern Adjusters. I'm an adjuster licensed to practice adjusting services in the state of Alaska. I don't have a lot to add to what's already been said. I certainly encourage you to read this bill very closely and give it your full consideration. We've had penalties assessed us. We've had sleepless nights worrying about penalties, and there's been a lot of cases where the fine just hasn't fit the foul, or you might say in basketball, no harm, no foul. And I think you ought to take a look at that. Very much.
Thank you very much.
Tricia Wilson.
My name is Tricia Wilson. I'm an adjuster with the Independent Adjuster for Surety of Alaska. I've specialized in handling workers' compensation claims for 13 years, the last 9 of those have been in Alaska. I have an interest in House Bill 6, both professionally and as a member of the public. I recognize the need to provide the Department of Labor with accurate information about the payment of claims, and that's both to provide the statistical data and to help enforce state payment penalties determined by the law. The division's review of compensation reports also helps out occasional computation errors. However, it seems to me the object of the law should be to gather the needed information as efficiently as possible for the benefit of the injured workers. If you place heavy fines on insurers and adjusters for easily correctable and essentially harmless paperwork errors, it has an effect that reaches down to the businessman and eventually the consumer. House Bill 6 provides a way to alert insurers to those compensation reports that they may have overlooked with minimal financial burden and allows them to get into compliance. Under the present system, for instance, a $15 compensation payment to an injured worker could possibly be subject to a fine 300 times greater for late reporting of the payment than the penalty that would be owed to the injured worker himself if it was his check that was paid. This doesn't benefit injured workers. Systems such as HB 6 substitute proposes would give insurers a fair chance to submit the required reports without being heavily penalized. Larger assessments can still be made against those who are unresponsive. Those are the ones who should be penalized, not the majority of us who are making good faith efforts to work within the statute to deliver benefits to injured workers. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to point out for the record that Representative Pierce has joined us. Now we'll take the next witness in Anchorage, and then we're going to go to Soldotna after this next witness because we have someone who wishes to testify in Soldotna.
Thank you, sir. This is the moderator in Anchorage. I'd like to now call Becky Tully to the microphone.
Hello, my name is Becky Tolley, supervising workers' compensation adjuster for Wilson Adjustment Services. I have been involved in workers' compensation claims in Alaska since 1978. House Bill 6, which we are speaking about today regarding reporting and penalties, should be passed as current law involving these issues is fair. Currently, the insurance and adjusting companies are being placed in an unrealistic reporting situation. Why is it so important that the Workers' Compensation Board must be notified within 14 days of any change in status of claims? The 28-day reporting requirement is more realistic from a claims handling point of view. For example, if you were to issue a compensation check for benefiting a claimant through blood purchase, and 14 days later you were notified that the claimant was released to work 2 weeks prior, you would have to process a form to the Workers' Compensation Board that very day or face a penalty. This happens very often. The claimant is aware that he was released from work 2 weeks before and expects no additional compensation. The doctor's office is just getting around to processing their forms, and usually this is who we receive notice of release for work from. You're being placed at the mercy of the doctor's office if there is no time frame reporting requirements for penalties are involved for them. They only have to submit a report if they want their bills. Also, the claimant is in no way being harmed by us not completing a form within 14 days. I can understand that the Workers' Compensation Board does need the information that we provide on these forms, But when the time frames for reporting such information and penalties are unrealistic, it adds unnecessary complications to the handling of a case. For present, filling out forms for the Workers' Compensation Board has to be considered a priority due to the penalty situation. This should not be happening. There are more important aspects of claims involving investigation, reserving, medical condition, and processing of charges than this form. I estimate for every time lost file handled, we are having to complete at least three forms for the Workers' Compensation Board. Three times we are faced with potential penalty situation with every time lost claim handled. With the passing of House Bill 6, it will eliminate some of the pressure for the insurance industry and will allow us to get on with more pressing matters. The Workers' Compensation Board does not lose either, as they will continue to receive the same information as we did in the past. I urge you strongly to consider House Bill 6 as it is important to the insurance industry as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to go to Soldotna and take testimony from Max Stevens.
Yeah, this is Max Stevens. I'm an injured worker, and I've heard nothing but the last eight or nine testimonies from nothing but insurance companies. And I'd like to testify on behalf of some of the injured workers out here. On July 27, 1984, I was notified that I was suspended from my benefit because of medical reports. And I tell you, for the last 7 months, I've been shuffling so much paperwork consisting of medical reports and insurance papers and stuff that it's about mind-boggling. Anyway, as far as this bill goes, I really don't feel that it benefits the injured worker. For, you know, an employee of the insurance company messing up, losing the reports or not filing them on time, and I think it should just be the way that it is. And if they are late with their payments or their paperwork and stuff, then I think that they should be liable for it. That's all I have.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to go to Ketchikan and take testimony from George Erickson.
Hey, this is George Erickson with Alaska Timber Insurance Exchange. I'm the general manager, as mostly I'm a full-time claim adjuster. I'm also here with Sharon Zink, one of our claims adjusters also. We'd like to have the committee support Senate bills, or the committee substitute House Bill 6 for the following reasons.
Excuse me for just a moment. I have to correct. It's a sponsor substitute that we have.
Thank you. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 6. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The Alaska Timber Insurance Exchange is in support of this substitute in regards to the following reasons. Both the financial and emotional, specifically the emotional burdens put on the penalties for the adjusters for monetary clerical errors that are oversight on everybody's part now and then, especially when they get up to the $2,500 category, which seems to be a stress that a lot of people don't really need. If a report is needed, and for some reason, either an adjuster or it's a clerical problem, and it's failed to go in, and the benefits to the claimant or the injured worker have not ceased, or they're not interrupting his benefits, but only failing to make the statistical information for the state of Alaska insufficient, I do not think a monetary fine of up to $1,000 the recent changes is really necessary, and a 21-day grace period is quite ample enough time to get these statistics in when you're working on a calendar year basis, if that's what mainly they're using the statistics for. The insurance companies are not wanting to jeopardize the claimant's benefits. We are just wanting to alleviate the emotional burden and financial burden of these penalties. Yet the state has access to the computers, and they know that we are short a form. We think it would be very nice and polite of them to inform us that we are short a report and get that in 21 days. Then if we do not comply, I have no problem with assessing a penalty. Examples are if you put in a rate change to the board and also notify and make your adjustment to the claimant, then if they notice the initial report wasn't there, they should notify you. Majority of the time, they do not notify you. They are just adding up a large bill until you in-depth review a file. So for those reasons, basically, we are supporting this House Bill 6. That's all I have.
Thank you. I might just ask a question at this time. Is the 21 days that is in the bill, is that, I mean, would 15 days or less days work, or is 21 days something that is a good figure?
If you're asking me here, George Erickson, Ketchikan, it's my opinion the 21 days is a three-week period, including the weekends, with some of the areas that we service all the way up. In fact, we even service the whole state with the mailing, with the mail situation and some of these remote sites, and with when the needed time of these benefits or statistical information to the state, I don't think three weeks is plenty of time.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to go to Anchorage and take testimony from the next person there.
Amount cannot be attributed to this report. It is, as I feel, one major portion of it. I feel House Bill 6, sponsor substitute, would not hamper reporting of data to the state, which I do feel is extremely important, but would greatly improve the claims department personnel attitudes, court handling workers' compensation claims, improve the industry's ability to staff for handling workers' compensation claims, and impact the cost of the workers' compensation claims to the employer. Most importantly, it would improve the delivery of workers' compensation benefits to the injured worker. Thank you.
Thank you. Could we have the next witness in Anchorage, please?
Mr. Glenn Smith, will you please push the mic?
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Smith, the manager of Adjustable Incorporated, independent adjusting and administration firm in Alaska. Prior to this deployment, I was a regional claim manager for an insurance company, so I've seen both sides of the fence. And there's not much more I can add. Most of my peer group that you've already heard have been a member of that peer group for well in excess of 7 years handling workers' compensation. I'm in support of House Bill 6, primarily for the morale purposes, but we should also take into consideration the geographics that exist in the state and the remote locations of many of our employers. Further, I believe that the statistical base is important to the Department of Labor from the illumination standpoint as it pertains to workers' compensation. I do not feel that it has to be done in 14 days, and my main concern is getting benefits to the employee. Thank you.
Thank you. Could we have the next witness also, please?
Thank you. Marilyn Murphy, please.
My name is Marilyn Murphy. I'm claims manager for Last Cash Insurance Company, and I'd like to speak in support of substitute bill for Hospital 6. To date, our company has had benefit penalties. However, with the human error factor, I am sure that we are going to end up having a penalty or two in the future, and know that it affects the morale of my staff, knowing that this is hanging over their heads. I feel that the penalty is too severe for the crime, and that the new House bill should be
Thank you very much. And I don't want to limit testimony, but I would ask the other witnesses who have yet to testify in Anchorage, if possible, if you're going to reiterate something that has already been said, would you just appoint a spokesman, and perhaps you could give us your number and or the number of people who are waiting to testify, so that we don't have to listen to a reiteration of some of the other concerns that have already been pointed out in the interest of time. Thank you.
This is the moderator in Anchorage. I'd like to ask a person by the last name of Henderson to please push the mic.
My name is Law Henderson. I'm the manager of Pacific Marine Insurance Company. Fortunately, I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare it just because I found out about this Tuesday. Most of the stuff that's been said today, I would like to reiterate. The House bill is now, or the act that currently is instituted, this doesn't help the employee get benefits faster. And it seems to me that that's the real thrust and reason we have this act, to help employees get the benefits. I'd like to say that we're in support of House Bill 6 as it's unconstitutional.
Thank you very much, Mr. Henderson. Could I have the next witness in Anchorage, please?
Thank you. Bob Nestle. He's approaching the microphone.
This is Bob Nestle. I want to recommend that your committee perhaps withdraw sponsored substitute for Hospital 6. Look upon this as maybe deleting this entire section from the current insurance code. Seems useless at this time to impose fines, and all the money does is wind up in the general fund of the state. It doesn't help the Department of Labor, it doesn't help the employee that's been injured, and obviously the Department of Labor spends a great deal of time compiling these fines. I would recommend that AS 2331-55C be withdrawn and a substitute bill be submitted to delete that from the statutes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Could I have the next witness in Anchorage, please?
This is David, the moderator in Anchorage. I'd like to ask Bobby, sorry, I can't read the last name, Jackson.
David, this is Mike Navar. How many people do we have yet to testify in Anchorage?
On Health Bill 6, I believe this would be the final person.
Thank you.
Right, we have one additional person on with Mr. Jackson.
I'm Bob Jackson, manager of Wilton Adjustment Service in Anchorage. We're independent adjusters who handle workers' compensation claims for various insurance companies and self-insured accounts. We support House Bill 6. The change in penalties assessed against the employer or insurance carrier is considerably more fair than current penalties being assessed. It is more in line with the punishment fitting the crime. We view the current system akin to a pedestrian given a jail term for crossing in the middle of the block rather than at the crosswalk. The purpose of the penalty is to generate monies for the second injury fund. I feel it's a more direct approach by assessing the employer or the insurance carrier direct rather than collecting penalties through an innocent error by a clerk or an adjuster. I did have a couple of examples that, quite frankly, have already been talked about. So I'll just end my testimony with the wish that you consider favorably the proposal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Could I have the next witness in Anchorage, please?
Thank you. Marion Birdie. Bernie.
My name is Marion Berry. I'm Senior Claims Examiner for Scott Wilson Services here in Anchorage. I have been in the insurance industry in excess of 10 years in Alaska. The only additional comment that I wish to add to the testimony already given is this. Everyone, including the Department of Labor, Workers' Comp Division, is subject to human errors, for the Division of Workers' Comp to not penalize their human errors, delays, oversight, than to provide a grace period for oversight and human errors in the insurance industry is quite reasonable and would very much lessen the friction between the industrial or the insurance industry and the Department of Labor Workers' Compensation.
At this time, that concludes testimony on Health Bill 6.
Thank you very much. Thank all the people who testified today. Taking the time to come down and testify on the bill we had before us today. At this time, I'd like to ask for testimony from Jackie McClintock.
What do you think? Let's see, is this on? Or it should be on? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jack McClintock, Director of the Workers' Compensation Division, and it seems that I've got to be the damper on this proposed amendment. Before I go into the reasons that the department and the Workers' Compensation Board are opposed to this bill, and I need to remind that we only saw the sponsor substitute this morning, although I've been corresponding with the insurance adjuster, Renee Marie, for some time. We did not know about it until just this morning. So I have some information and some letters that I've given you copies of. I hope you've had time to read them, but I will explain them to you as we go along. In any event, before I go into what we feel the effects of this bill would be, I would like first to go back a few years to explain how this reporting and penalty system came about and what has evolved between labor and management, the two main parties in the workers' compensation system, and and explain a little bit what's happened, these two parties coming together in mutual agreement or compromise, jointly proposing or endorsing legislation and change to Alaska's Workers' Compensation Act and system for the betterment, again, of the two main parties in the system, and that's the injured worker and the employer. In 1980-81, there was a legislative workers' compensation task force appointed, made up of three employer representatives, three labor, and one insurance industry representative. That committee was co-chaired by Senator Terry Stimson and Representative Brian Rogers to gather data from our files so that they could make some informed decisions. The best thing they had to say about the information in our files and the reporting system was that it was abysmal. As we know now from our state and from other states, it is impossible to know where you're going unless you know where you've been. We didn't then, we do now. Both the legislature and this committee spent many, many hours trying to work out a compromise between labor and management on many different workers' compensation issues. And while most of the proposed legislation on benefits, rate making, and those types of issues crashed and burned, there was a very definite meeting of the minds and compromise and an agreement that management and labor in the state had to have the tools with which to work to make informed decisions on workers' compensation matters. It was this legislative committee, along with labor and management, who laid out the present reporting system and penalty system, except at the time that this was first enacted, there was a $2,500 penalty as a maximum. Now there was $1,000. There was a 14-day reporting maximum. Now there is 28 days maximum time to report. And by the way, on the 28 days, that is the date that the envelope with the report is postmarked, not the time that it takes to come to Juneau and possibly overhead to Sitka and Seattle and back a couple of days ago. It's a postmark date on the envelope. Now, it was not only the need for data gathering, which you've heard today, that prompted this reporting system, but it was also Alaska's track record of promptness of payments to injured workers, which, according to one of the committee researchers, was one of the worst in the United States. Now, as to the effects of the system, and I've outlined this letter, outlined this in my letter, recent letter to Renee Murray of February 23rd, 1985. I believe you have copies of those.
Pardon me, this is the moderator in Anchorage, and we are still having a very difficult time understanding your transmission from Juneau.
Because I don't talk long.
You might.
I never had that problem.
Is
that it?
I'll go slower.
Okay. All right, fine. I don't usually have to use one of these. Now, as to some of the effects of the system as it is in effect today. For the first time in Alaska's workers' compensation system, the injured worker receives information in a systematic way when they receive a copy of the compensation report, and that's usually at the same time that they receive a payment, or perhaps a contraversion, something this time. Explaining how benefits were computed, the benefits being paid, and the reasons for any kind of change, and most important, the worker's rights. The report also encourages the worker to resolve any differences directly with his insurance adjuster. If he can't, then he should contact us. What this reporting system has done is to set up a communication line between the injured worker and the insurance adjuster that we believe has substantially discouraged litigation on claims. this is going to be severely affected by this change. Number two, before the 1981 reporting amendment, timely first payments to the injured worker within 14 days, and by the way, that is in the handout, and that is the period, basically, that is required under the Act, were being paid on about 25% of the claims and within about 28 days, the maximum time period, at about 59%. In fiscal year 1984, there were about 42% and 85%, respectively. Now, that's not as great as we had hoped for, but it's a lot better than we had before, and what it means is that nearly 2,000 more injured workers receive benefits within 14 days, and nearly 4,500 more receive benefits within 28 days. That really counts when we're talking about disputes on workers' compensation claims because of not paying benefits promptly or perhaps correctly. Again, we attribute this improvement to the fact that through the reporting system, the 20% late payment penalty provision can be routinely and easily enforced. Before 1981, these 20% late payment penalties, which are paid to the injured worker because he has not received the timely benefits, were only caught and enforced when it came to the board's attention through a hearing or on a chance review of the file. Again, this is going to be substantially affected by this change. Number three, for the first time, we are able to catch errors made in computing compensation benefits to injured workers. And notice the parties before it becomes a dispute that ends up in litigation. And by the way, that particular provision works both ways. If the insurer has not computed benefits correctly and is paying too much, we also notice them on that, which means then that the employee's benefits are reduced. Again, that's going to be severely affected by this change. And finally, as I said earlier, for the first time, the legislature, labor, and management in this state can make decisions based on facts. Now, what also evolved during this time was a coalition between employer and labor groups in this state, which is called the Labor Management Workers' Compensation Ad Hoc Committee. I have given you a recap here of their history. They have gotten together and thoroughly discussed, reviewed, and mutually agreed upon all changes that have been made to the Workers' Compensation Act in the last 4 years. They work with what I call us peripheral folks, the Workers' Compensation Division and Board from the administrative and adjudicatory role, insurers, of course, because they are basically under contract with employers to provide adjusting services, and of course, physicians, vocational rehabilitation providers, and attorneys. I can't stress enough here with you how fortunate Alaska is in having this type of meeting of minds between the system's two main parties, who by the very nature of the program are adversarial in nature. Now, that does not mean that anyone does not have the right to come in and propose legislation to this body. But I think that any such changes, like HB 6 or its sponsor substitute, should at least have the concurrence of the ad hoc committee. I have sent copies of Ms. Murray's and my correspondence to the ad hoc committee. Of course, they have not had the opportunity to look at this committee change. Although I did talk to Mr. Thompson, I believe that he was at Representative Collins' office. And I'll get into that a little later. You will hear that this only affects insurers and has nothing to do with the injured workers. It does have an effect on both the injured worker and the employer as well, for the reasons I have mentioned. And particularly, I've mentioned those in my letter. To compare how it used to be as far as report filing, before the 1981 amendment, timely reports were only filed in about 50% of all claims. We believe that has a direct correlation to the poor payment record I mentioned before. There was a $100 penalty and no follow-up system, something similar to what's being proposed today. Insurers are also required to file anniversary reports under AS 2331-55M. There is no penalty for failure to file this report. They are filing on about 18% of all claims. Insurers are now filing compensation reports in 97 to 100% of all claims. There is a penalty of up to $1,000 for failure to file. That insurers, and believe me, I do not mean to imply in any way that insurers purposely refuse or fail to file reports just because there's no penalty, or in this case, a computer monitoring system that will work. But just like all of us, they are extremely busy people who must set priorities. A penalty and reporting system such as we have today is clearly a significant incentive to encourage placing prompt payment and reporting at a fairly high priority. I heard the gentleman, and I'm not too sure where he was from, I think it was a gentleman, say something about us paying penalties. We do pay a penalty. The Division of Workers' Compensation pays a penalty for every day a decision is late to an injured worker. We pay $10 a day, and there's no maximum on that.
Excuse me, who do you pay it to?
I'll go more into that. We were sued in 1982. Yeah, it started, but the agreement was 1982. And it was a class action suit that was launched in Fairbanks by attorney Lance Parrish, and on behalf of all injured workers who were deprived prompt adjudication by the board, he lodged a lawsuit and prevailed, and that lawsuit stayed in effect, or that agreement for us to pay stayed in effect for 3 years. In fact, I think it just ends something like in June of this year.
Who do you pay?
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. We pay injured workers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, as you will notice in my correspondence with Renee Murray, who I believe basically drafted the basics of this amendment. Excuse me. I'm going into the correspondence. I've given copies of my correspondence with both Ms. Murray and Randall Weddle of the law firm of Faulkner, Banfield, Dubin, and Holmes, who represents Ms. Murray's firm, Scott Wetzel Services. I think our reasoning in opposing this sponsor substitute is pretty well outlined. Number one is that a comprehensive system could not be realistically achieved because of the many variables involved in the different types of reports that are submitted. Number two, it would be more costly for both the insurance industry and, of course, the employer and the state of Alaska, who would have to increase their staffs to keep up with the letters that would be flying back and forth. The reports would have to be filed just as they are now, but instead we would be grappling, and so would the insurer, with notices upon notices on about 50% of their cases, if past history is a good indicator, and that's all we have. Our present system does not require notices, is more efficient, less costly for both of us, for the insurance and the employer, and is resulting in 97 to 100% compliance. Again, we use the figure of 50% based on past history. Just this last year, we had 24,000 some odd compensation reports. This year, at 6 months, it looks like it's going to go over 25,000 filings of compensation reports. That means 12,000 some odd could be flying back and forth on this problem. Now, I can't tell you what the unanimous decision of the ad hoc committee might be on this substitute. I do believe you have a letter from the ad hoc committee, yes, but on this substitute itself. But I can tell you what the...
I'm Representative Boucher here. I don't mean to interrupt you, but this thought comes in my mind. What is the authorization for the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee? Is that authorized by statute? Is it something that's done by regulation internally or general agreement?
Representative Boucher, it is by general agreement. They at one time talked about a labor management ad hoc committee being included in the statute, but decided against that. In 1980-81 legislative session, again, it was an outgrowth of the legislative committee that was appointed at that time to investigate and to work on workers' compensation problems. So it is simply an ad hoc committee of labor and management that have proposed and have worked with the legislature for the last 4 years on amendments.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Boucher.
This is a very important committee, you know, which appears to contain a mix of people in looking at it from both labor and management. And I quote from your letter of the 23rd, as you are aware, any changes to the Alaska Workmen's Compensation Act since 1981 have been as a result of compromise between labor and management and their joint sponsorship of proposed legislation through the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. The department subscribes to the theory, as I am sure you do, that the two main parties in the workers' compensation system are the injured worker and the employer. Therefore, we feel all legislative proposals affecting these two parties should be thoroughly studied. One of the things I would like to see is the minutes of this Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee that met on February 4th, 1985, that allowed them to arrive at this decision that says, quote, "It was the decision of the committee to oppose House Bill 6 as submitted. Labor and management unanimously concurring." Was this a voice vote? I have minutes on it, because we are bringing another entity in here that affects our decision project, and I, for one, don't want to make a decision on this until I see what the deliberations of this ad hoc committee were in arriving at their decision, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Belcher.
Mr. Chairman, again, you can contact Jack Thompson, who is the co-chairman of Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee, or Kevin Doherty, who is the labor member of the one of the labor members and co-chair of the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. It is my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that Kevin Doherty has been trying to contact you. He didn't know anything, I'm sure, about the teleconferencing, nor did Mr. Thompson. I talked to him yesterday. I'm sure that they would like to put in their opinion on this committee or this sponsor substitute as well. Going back, I did speak to both Mr. Thompson and Kevin Doherty, and as you can see, they are copied on my letters to the ones to Ms. Murray and to now. Again, the ad hoc committee was unanimously opposed to HB 6 in its original form. And let me tell you the reasons that they were opposed to that bill and why I believe they will likewise be opposed to this bill. In the first place, this issue has been discussed at length every year since the reporting system went into effect. In 1983, I was presented with numerous letters from the insurance industry at a meeting with the insurance representative members of the Workers' Compensation Committee of Alaska, and by the way, that is a group of employers who are interested in workers' compensation reform, and the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. From this meeting and six subsequent meetings, there was legislation passed in 1983 that reduced the maximum, again, from 2,500 to 1,000, and in 1984 gave insurers 28 days to report rather than 14. These were changes that were mutually agreed upon by all of us. However,
Chairman, can we have records of these meetings at which these things, once again, you're talking about the labor, I would like the minutes, I am requesting the minutes of all labor management ad hoc committee meetings that arrived at any decisions relative to this legislation.
Mr. Chairman, those were not formal meetings. I remember one was at the top of the Tower Club. I know that they held.
I consider that hearsay evidence.
Excuse me. Well, I think that the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee would be glad to speak to you on it, or glad to contact you on it.
I'm addressing the committee as a whole.
Well, and again, the committee members.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. This is very important to me, because there's two factors involved in here, and there's a third factor coming in here that would certainly affect my decision. And if somebody just met informally, then it would water down what you were saying to me.
Thank you, Representative Belcher.
Yeah, I don't mean to press that point, but to me, I think it's a key thing in this legislation, Mr. Chairman.
Your point is well taken. I also feel that we probably should have someone from this committee to address us and answer our concerns on it. At least maybe they could justify their meetings and their position on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be an excellent idea, and I think you would have heard from them today from Anchorage had they known that this was going to be teleconferenced. They may have more formal. I know that I was in the preliminary stages, but we were also in the final decision making, as were all parties in the system. I'll go on to state that it was the feeling of the ad hoc committee as it is today that the present system works for the betterment of the workers' compensation program, the injured worker, and the employer in particular. And the state of Alaska should not be paying, for what a systems problem with the insurance industry seems to be. This, at least, was the comment by Mr. Jack Thompson. In this case, it will place the burden on the workers' compensation division to tell the insurance company that they have not done something that they were supposed to do. It is also their opinion that the insurer contracts with the employer for adjusting claims with a full knowledge of the law that is in effect. If it takes more people and money to promptly report and pay, the management members on this committee, the ad hoc committee, are saying, put that cost in the overhead. It's that important to us. Whether it is the sponsor substitute or the original bill, the underlying intent of the ad hoc committee is that they want to see what the results are first of the 1983 and 84 amendments that were passed and took effect in January 1 and July 1, 1984, respectively, so they can study those before they try to make further change. I have no doubt that they would be intending to do that before the next legislative session. As a side comment, oh, first of all, I better comment on the statement that there would not be any fiscal note. There would be fiscal impact for the reasons that I have stated previously. I'm not too sure where that impression came from. In the first place, we're going to have to reprogram the computer at a cost, approximate cost of about $20,000. We would need one data processing clerk who is going to have to first look up all the files, bring up the information, and then re-input the information that would be coming in from the insurers, and one workers' compensation technician to do the audit work that would be necessary. Actually, I think that same audit work would put a burden on the insurers. We did not have time to give you a formal fiscal note. I would say that it would run about $100,000.
Excuse me, yes. Would that be just during the period when they were going through the changeover, or would that be continuing?
No, that would be continuing. Oh, well, the $20,000 would be a one-time shot in reprogramming the computer, because it's going to be a very difficult thing, to even if it is even possible, and we're not too sure that it is. But the DP clerk and the workers' comp tech would be an ongoing.
Why would that be?
Because they're going to have to, because of the different kind of system. This is not just an interim thing. This is ongoing in that we would now have to tell the insurer when they hadn't filed a report that they were supposed to file. And of course, one of the main things on this is if the insurer never filed an initial report, how would we know that they hadn't filed a report on a claim? It's kind of like registering or failing to register for the draft. How would you know something that you couldn't possibly know had taken place? Because again, I have to stress that they are the ones, the insurance companies and adjusters on behalf of the employer, that initiate any kind of action on a claim. All they're doing is telling us within 28 days of that action, this is the action we have taken.
Thank you. How about possibly increasing the days for reporting rather than offering a 21-day period?
It's at 28 days now. It wouldn't make any difference. We would still have to go through to see the things that were failed, that they failed to report on. Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, but if you increase that reporting period, then you already, I mean, right now it's at 28 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, say you moved it to 35 days or 40 days or something like that, right? They'd still, then all you'd be doing is increasing the number of days, is that correct?
That's all you'd be doing is increasing the number of days, but that's not what's in this bill. What's in this bill is a completely new type of reporting system and response system. I'm sorry, if I'm reading you right, are you saying now increase it, just forget the committee substitute and are the sponsor substitute?
That was just a thought that
okay,
came into my mind. And I'd also like to ask you, what do you do for auditing now? I mean, certainly you must have someone who does it now.
That is correct. However, we are talking about the difference between 50% compliance, and again, I'm comparing that to history, which all that we have, and right now, which is 97 to 100%. So the amount, and I just in going through, and in fact, if you could follow through with me, in the letter that I sent to Representative Collins on February 27th, the first attachment to that is a listing of all the penalties paid from January 1st, 1982 to the present time. and that is broken out by insurer, adjusting agency, or self-insured employer.
I'm not sure we have that.
I just got it last night, and I think it was handed over to the committee for copying.
February 27th, this one here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask something of Jackie McClintock?
Who is asking, please?
Ms. Sarah Hrotzka in Fairbanks.
Certainly, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm just really having trouble understanding exactly why the state would have to increase the staff to monitor the compensation reports. It appears that they could continue to do the same as they are doing now, only instead of the first notification to the insurer or adjuster being a penalty assessment, notification would to put them on notice to file the report, and the penalty would start accruing if they didn't. There is a monitoring system now. granted, sometimes it's a little long, but they still do monitor whether the reports are filed or not, and when they send a notification, then of course the penalty has to be paid. So all it would do, I mean, there wouldn't have to be an increase in staff or a change in the computer or anything else. It would just change what the results of that notification would be. Am I missing something here?
Thank you. Ms. McClintock?
Yes, Claire, this is Jackie. I believe you are. I think the important point is that we're comparing 50% compliance with the reporting requirements as it was prior to 1981 with 97 to 100%. So what I'm saying is 3% of our reporting on claims have a problem at the current time. In the old days, it was 50%. We have every reason to believe, because this is a similar law, the $100 wasn't that great of an incentive, and because our monitoring system cannot be as good as what it is now, because we can't know what they have done or not done, then we are going to have more reports, and you have notices upon notices. First, you're going to be sending the notices out to the insurer, and they are going to be responding back. So at least on half of those, then you're doubling up on notices, and that's the difference.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boucher.
I do. I want to ask questions on these big areas. Might it not be because you now have a sophisticated database system in place, but that is the reason for the increase in efficiency? And if you had that efficient data system in place back then, where you're doing it by hand calculating, quite obviously it cost more money and made errors. So is this a fair comparison, comparing a hand operation in, what was it, 81, to a highly sophisticated computer system? And then secondly, you said it would reprogram it at a cost of $20,000. Obviously, you were concerned this might happen, so I would like to see the correspondence that justified $20,000 in programming. What you must have said to somebody, if we have to do this, how much will it cost to reprogram it? And I'd like to see the letter that went to you that you arrived at the $20,000 figure at. Then secondly, I'd like to ask, who does your reprogramming? We've got in the Department of Administration budget, I think something, I forget how many million dollars for programmers that are sitting over there. So is the Department of Administration doing your program for you, and is this a chargeback? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I just feel a necessity to ask these questions on these statements that come out that I don't see any documentation based on.
Mr. Chairman? As far as the cost, Representative Boucher, we just knew that this sponsor substitute was being made this morning. That is why I called down to our, as I said, I don't have a formal fiscal mode because I simply haven't had time to do them. Mm-hmm. I called down to our computer people downstairs. I talked to them previously about the problems we would have in implementing this type of system. I did not talk about the cost. The $20,000 represents 4 months of programmer time at his basic salary. I believe it's a range 21, something like that. Now, that is not done by the Department of Administration. The Department of Labor has our system on its own mainframe, So it's one of our personnel. It does, not working for the division directly. It works for Employment Security Division.
Excuse me for just a moment. I know that we still have two people in Anchorage who wish to testify on another bill, James McGowan and Linda O'Bannon, and I'd like to apologize because we're not going to get to any other bills today. So I apologize for not being able to take your testimony today. We will notify you when we have the bills up in committee. I believe it's House Bill 138. We'll have it up next Thursday. And we will notify you and set up a teleconference so that you can testify.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, I have to finish. We also have several other people here to testify on House Bill 64, House Bill 211, and House Bill 138, and we're not going to take up any of those bills today. They'll all be rescheduled for next Thursday, except for 64. We might get a chance to get to it later today, and if not, we'll take it up Wednesday. Thank you. Representative Collins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions that I'd like to ask Ms. McClinic. That information you gave us, well, first and foremost, prior to 1981, there was not a computer system in the Workers' Compensation Division, so actually there was no way of keeping track of any reliable way of keeping track of what was happening. So after any information, statistical information that was developed prior to that probably wasn't very accurate. Would that, is that a correct statement?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, no, it is not. Excuse me, let me correct that. I would appreciate if I could respond back and forth. This would also respond to Representative Boucher's question.
Okay. Also, I'd just like to correct myself. House Bill 211 will take up next Wednesday instead of next Thursday. And it'll probably be carried over until Thursday. Nevertheless, we'll take it up next Wednesday. Ms. McClinic?
Certainly the system that we had in effect before was not only archaic, it was abysmal, and we stated that in the previous testimony. However, there was a system, because late, very late, and that's, we feel, what would happen in this system also, I mean, not quite the time lapse. I think I did mention that in my letter. In that, when a claim was closed and purged from the system, it's microfilm. That could be 2 years from the date of injury, or it could be much further. It's always 2 years. It's not purged until 2 years from the date of last payment. All right. At the time that it was purged, if our people, our microfilm people, went through the file, if they did not find that there was a final report, and that day it was an initial report and a final report that had to be filed, then we sent letters to the insurance company saying, you have not filed a final report or initial report, or there hasn't been any report. I've seen decision and orders where like five reports were fined, or there were fines, five fines for failure to file five reports. Now, we didn't have a good response to that in the first place, and also we did not have the people to conduct hearings on it. So the system to collect those fines was extremely poor. That is correct. But we did have a system in place. We certainly did not have any kind of statistical system. And that's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about fines.
I have about a total of four questions. The second question is on your fiscal note. That was my understanding.
Okay, excuse me for just a moment. We'll try and get to all your questions, and then we're going to have to hold this bill over until next week again, because we simply are going to run out of time. There is another committee meeting in this room. Representative Collins.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, on your fiscal note, from your testimony, you're anticipating that you're going to have a 50% compliance. So is your fiscal note that you prepared for the bill based on that 50% compliance?
Yes, it is.
Would it be fair, I mean, just because we're human beings and we like to be, you know, give people a chance, would it be fair to as well do a fiscal note based on the current rate of compliance that you have?
Representative Collins, I don't think that could possibly apply is the problem. Basically, let me just say this. If you want to give a money figure, although I do not think it would be reasonable, there would be no fiscal note on that except for the computer programming. But if you're telling me that 97 to 100% of all reports would continue to be filed, even with this change, then I would not need those two employees. The computer still has to be programmed.
If I may follow up on that, but you don't know that you're not going to have 97%, is that correct?
No.
What I'm saying is that I, as a person who sponsored the bill, and,
right,
and I, see, I have a computer system in my office, and I've had it for probably about 6 years, and we always change that thing and reprogram it, and I have never had to add a staffer. I have never had to pay a $20,000 bill to have it reprogrammed, so I'm a little bit confused as to why, if you're just going to be changing somebody's duties a little bit, why it would increase the extra staffing. So there are a lot of things that aren't clear, and what I'm saying is that if you're going to be able to assume that you're going to have only going to have 50% compliance, and you're going to base your fiscal note on that, it would seem only fair that you use the present level of compliance to establish your fiscal information, and I would like to request that.
Representative Collins, and that is true. That's what I told you. If there's 97 to 100% compliance, then the two employees on the auditing and re-entry of the information will not be necessary. All right, as again, you know, I got it at 10 o'clock this morning, and in calling our computer people downstairs, they said they thought off the head it would take about 4 months, four man months, to reprogram the computer to do the kind of thing we're going to have to do in going back between notices. Now, I will be glad to have them write out something. I will be glad to have them come up and testify.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Belcher.
My administrative assistant has a degree in computer science.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. This is the moderator.
This Representative Boucher, my administrative assistant has a degree in computer science, and I would like to have whoever is making the estimate of the program to it, because these people can snow you. You know, they change a few bits and bytes, and they don't, which makes the program faster. So any change in the program, he may or may not be familiar with that language, meaning that computer language. But I would like to have that programmer who gave you a figure of $20,000 present it to him, because with the concurrence of the chairman, of course, because he just handed me a note, says that appears to be mighty excessive to me. I think we're the victim of high-tech mesmerizing around every time one of these computer people, and we sit in awe of them, say they're going to change something, it's $1 million. So it may be of assistance to both you.
Mr. Chairman, I would welcome, the person that will be doing our reprogramming is John Rechtenwald for the Department of Labor, Employment Security Division. I would like to have him meet with Representative Boucher, the programmer. It's possible that the person told you that would be excessive does not have that type of knowledge of the workers' compensation system, either, or our computer system.
Well, that just shuffles numbers. These, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's dealing with license plates or workman compensation. The computer's a one or a zero, you know. It doesn't care whether you write me our father in there or not. So these people can tend to snow you, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And I think,
excuse me. What I'd like to do, Representative Boucher, if you could have your administrative assistant meet with the person from Workers' Comp, and they could discuss it, and perhaps we could get a report back from you to the committee. Would that be Representative Davis?
I believe Representative Collins was in progress. I'll let her on the floor.
I have another question. One of the comments that you made is that the bill would have an increase in litigation. I seem to recall that several weeks ago we sat in this room and heard you give testimony that the increase in litigation over the last 2 years had been so significant that you have to have an additional board in Anchorage. And I guess I'm saying that I'm particularly aware of the changes that have occurred in the Workers' Compensation Division in the last 2 to 3 years, and I can clearly understand why we do have an increase in litigation. I don't really, in that all that this does is changes the reporting and basically affects a department, the Department of Labor, and it does not change the way that the worker was paid. I would like to get from you an understanding of why you think that would increase the litigation and the reasons for that.
Okay. And again, that's outlined in my February 23rd letter to Ms. Murray. And that is because we have every reason to believe that compliance will slip as a result of this bill. And if it does, reporting does not continue, time of reporting to us, then probably it means that the injured worker isn't going to be notified either. So what happens if he does not know what's going on his claim, if there's no explanation of it, then there's going to be an increase of litigation, just like there was in the old days when nobody knew what was going on in their claim.
But we have more litigation now than we did in the old days, don't we?
You also have about, about $10,000 to $12,000, or $10,000 to $12,000, excuse me, claims in the system also. You're comparing back to 1981, there's been a steady increase in the number of claims. And there's also been how many Supreme Court cases that have come down substantially changing. We just had like three or four just this past year that substantially changed. Anytime you have that, then you have an increase of litigation. But I don't think you can compare litigation then with now for the same reason.
Okay, thank you, Representative Collins. I'm going to have to apologize. Ms. McClintock, thank you very much for your testimony.
Could I have just one more statement? I'll make it very quick. I think it is notable that there have been no employers testify on this except those that are involved in the insurance industry. We had one injured worker. I would like to request that at least these people be given an opportunity to express it.
The bills are scheduled.
Oh, great. Okay.
5 days in advance.
Anybody?
That's true.
But not the committee substitute.
Right, but I would say that the sponsor substitute is quite a bit less of an impact than the original bill. So anyone who was, well, perhaps we don't agree on that, but in any case, at least it seems like they would have been willing to testify on this, the original bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mr. Thompson was given that he was one of the first people to get a copy of the sponsor substitute even before I saw it, because I was out of town when that sponsor substitute came, and he had at least 2 weeks ago, and it was our understanding he was going to review that with the people from the department.
In any case, he did,
and it was the same response, that he wanted to see what the effects of the 1983-84 amendments were before the
So you actually did see that 2 weeks ago, or you'd had the information on the sponsor substitute 2 weeks ago?
Oh, I have been corresponding with Renee Murray. I had no idea that you were going to present it as a committee or sponsor substitute until this morning.
Okay. In any event, the bill has been held over to next week. Anyone who wishes to testify will have an opportunity, and I'm sure we'll do some extensive research into this. At this time, I'd like to thank all the teleconference sites. We'll notify you when we're going to have the bill up again. And at this time, unless there are any objections, I'd like to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.